Well, welcome to On the Rock, our very first podcast.
Yeah.
I'm pretty fired up. It's kind of been a little bit of a dream of mine. I got Tommy here, Tommy Claffey, Too Tall Tommy.
That's what they call me.
That's what they call him. Yeah. And then we got over here, we got Peyton. Peyton, what's your last name?
Mon Blue. He's still, after all these years, you don't know my
still
last name.
What's your last name?
Mon Blue.
This is Mon Blow.
Mon Blue.
This guy did my wedding. And it still doesn't know my last name.
But I nailed it at the wedding.
I've been here for less than 6 months, and he got mine perfect.
So yeah, that's really sounds about right.
Tommy. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I'm Angelo Felice. I'm the host of On the Rock. I'm also the founding pastor here at Rock Church. I started wrestling guys a little bit with, like, what do we want to be our very first episode? You know, that I think that's kind of important. And I just got done with a series. I know you guys were in their sermon series called Voices. Yeah. And I'm not going to get into the whole series, but we talked about worldly voices and fleshly or self voices. We got into religious voices as well as the enemy's voice, and we landed on the Holy Spirit's voice. Maybe that'd be another good episode. But we started that. We kicked that series off with the cost of our voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I remember just really challenging the congregation, including myself, that, you know, our voice needs to cost us something today. It doesn't seem like a lot of things that people say there's a cost or there's a price to pay.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? If I'm going to do a podcast, I want it to cost me something.
Yeah.
I want to have to pay some type of a price. I remember talking in that first message about John the Baptist, his voice. He's the voice crying in the wilderness, and his voice cost him his head. And we talked a little bit about Stephen. And his voice cost him being one of the first martyrs in the church. Right. And obviously Jesus's voice, you know, cost him his life. You know, that's a big part of why he was crucified, because of what he said, who he was, right? So, I want to make sure that On the Rock is something that cost me a little bit something. I surely hope it doesn't cost me my life, but I do think it should be something that cost me something.
Yeah,
I don't want to coddle the Christian culture that's out there. So that's just a little introduction from my head in my heart. I want you guys to just, what does that say to you? Just that intro.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can kick it off. I think that's actually kind of one of the things I'm really passionate about is Christianity doesn't exist for us. It's not, I always call it like leveraging Jesus. Like, we're not here to leverage Jesus for our own sake, financially, relationally, all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's wonderful things that come from it. And I believe that all good things come from Christ, but that's not the purpose, right? Like,
sure.
I use a parallel with like my wife. Like, I didn't marry my wife to get all the benefits of being with my wife, whether it's financial support, emotional support, anything like that. If I were just to go out and take all the gifts I get from my wife and never spend any time with her, then there's no point into that relationship. Mm-hmm. So the same thing here. We need to be asking ourselves, how are we walking our daily life like Christ? And if you look at the example, he laid down his life. It cost him something in everything he did. And so we have to ask ourselves, what are we laying down daily in order to be like Christ and model Christianity supposed to be in a modern day time versus, hey, if I do A, B, C, and D, God's going to bless this job. God's going to bless and bring me my spouse. God's going to give me these worldly gifts. We can't just honor God because we want the worldly gifts. Even though those things, I believe the all good, like I said, comes from the Lord. But that's not why we follow Christ.
I think what I'm excited about with the podcast is the different generational voices that we're going to have here. Because we're probably going to agree to disagree on some things.
Well, yeah, we'll get
like, to sports, which that's another conversation. But I think that when you get different generational voices, sometimes we're saying the same thing, but in different ways. And then there's other times where we see things differently, you know? So I think the cost there is going to look different for generations. And that's exciting for me to see as we kind of talk about it.
Yeah. Well,
let's go there. Let's talk about, your generation, when you hear the concept of your voice for Jesus should cost you something, what comes to your mind? I'm assuming you guys are both millennials.
Both millennials.
Gen Z.
I'm right on the edge.
I'm turning 26 in a couple weeks here, so I'm really
Gen
connected
Xer, all right,
with
Gen
the
X.
Youth.
So
Gen X.
So when it comes to your generation, you know, and you hear the concept of the cost for Jesus, what do you guys think about?
I think it's tough. I especially, I'm right on the edge of millennial Gen Z. I think for Gen Z, like a true Gen Zer, I think for them, I see a lot of like, I got to be my true self, right? So everything I post, everything I do, you know, has to be about Jesus. And, you know, I was just looking at some social media accounts of even some young people that even go to the church here. And I was just seeing like, sometimes it can come across a little abrasive, or it could come across a little like corny, like I live for Jesus, but it's cool to see the authenticity. So the cost a little bit there is, I think people can judge very easily when you point fingers and poke holes at somebody's faith, but it's going to be very outward, right? And if it doesn't line up outwardly, I think then that people start to question that, you know, with inward things. So
I'm just curious, a tangible outward, like how would someone reflect that?
Yeah, I think that it looks different for certain people. I think one topic we should talk about eventually on the podcast, maybe we get to it today, I don't know, is living one way in church and the other way at home, right? I think that's a really important thing, not being hypocritical. But I think that you look at generations that, you know, if I'm going to live bold for Jesus, everything I say at school or everything I say at work has to be about Jesus. And that's fair. It's a good point. But obviously, sometimes conversations are going to come about naturally. And instead of doing that and just talking about Jesus all the time, your life has to model that. So it's kind of a two-sided coin, I think, I see with the generations.
Yeah, you were telling me, I don't know, about a month or so ago, I'm not sure what study you were reading on or whatever, you were saying that your generation tends to want to be happy.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe you could expound on that a little bit.
Yeah. There was a study that I was looking at from George Barna. And it was the Generation Z, I think the third volume study. And it talked about how, what is the thing that Gen Z craves the most in their life? And the one that was overwhelming was being happy.
Yeah.
And it was funny because we started talking about joy and joy being true happiness and all that. And it's just very interesting that, you know, we look at that and how do we help the generations to see that the joy comes from the Lord and not from temporary things. So, you know, when you have a flame or a fire for God, when you're living on the rock, like you're not just doing it just for this temporary happiness. Like God wants you to have true joy in trials, true joy in everything you do. So I think Gen Z looks at the lens of things through happiness. I think me personally, I look at things like the cost for me is sometimes, I'm not saying this is right, but sometimes I look at things through the lens of success. And so it's like, how do I achieve for God, right? And so that's the tension I face versus like, am I truly happy? You know, I don't know if you feel that way in the generation a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm a little bit of an older millennial, like an elder millennial. But I grew up in the time I graduated high school, right? When 08, I graduated in 09, but like the 08, 09 recession, like I got out of there and like everything, we were scraping by to try to figure it out.
Yeah,
and like I tried to get a job out of high school and not to take away from any Gen Z stuff, but it was during the COVID time, I saw some people get out of high school and the government was like handing them money. And I'm not trying to like, I'm not trying to give this, like, I'm not trying to make it like a political thing or anything like that. But what I'm saying is I grew up in an era where I had to like fight to just kind of scrape by, especially being from Los Angeles. Like it's the city of dreams, and like, in order to just have a base level of lifestyle of just a quality of life, you have to be working 2-3 jobs. And that kind of translated into my relationship with God, where I was almost leveraging, when I was a little bit less mature in my faith, I was leveraging Christ for me to have just a quality of life, or just to take the stress off of me, or Lord, like bring me this blessing or abundance so I can escape these emotions and feelings that I don't want to feel anymore. And I think that was a really unhealthy thing that was kind of drilled in, at least for myself, or maybe my generation, is that we have to kind of earn the blessing of God, and we have to earn these things, and the reward are physical, tangible things of this world. And with something I've had to go through in the last couple of years is kind of unwind that.
Yeah.
One, like the reward for following Jesus is Jesus. And my whole thing was, if you follow Jesus, or I grew up in a very prosperity gospel time, and just a lot of the church that I grew up in were very prosperity based. And I had to take myself out of that and say, hey, it can't be that Jesus hung on the cross and his last words, he just hung there and said, you know, Lord, give Debbie that promotion. Like, that's not why Christ died. And so I had to redefine, well, why am I a Christian? Why did Christ die? Why am I following? How am I following? And really deconstructed, not my faith from like a Christianity standpoint, but my misinterpretation of basically why I was following God. So I think to kind of circle it back, in order for us to understand what the cost is, we have to understand what Christ did for us and the purpose of why Christ did it. That's why it's so important to go back to scripture and to really study, is because to know what it costs is to understand what it costs for Christ.
Yeah, maybe you guys can help me, because, you know, I'm an old Gen Xer, right? And I want to make sure that, you know, the message I share connects to the younger generations.
Right.
The last thing I want to do is compromise in any way. I want to hold true to my convictions, but I struggle a little bit knowing that the younger generation is moved by joy and happiness. And I surely don't think that that the entire gospel, and I don't want to leave that out, because there surely is the abundant life that God calls us to. But I live in this tension, knowing that the younger generation in general wants to leave church feeling happy and fulfilled. But my generation was more like, pay the price, you know, do something for God. There's a price to pay. There's a cost to pay. So maybe you guys can give me some quick insights on how to help me not only to preach, but also just to live my life around the younger generation so that can make a bigger impact.
Yeah. What does the Bible say? There's joy in trials, right? Joy in hardship.
Yeah,
and I think that there's got to be some sort of marriage between the two, right? Because if it's just joy, 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 then you're kind of talking about what Tommy's is saying, right? Then you're going to think life's going to be easy, right? But I think it's that joy and hardship. And, you know, I feel like one thing we got to do on this podcast is we've got to tell a lot of stories. Like, I think people love hearing your stories, Pastor.
Oh boy.
I think people like hearing the things that you've gone through and some of the maybe the crazy things that have happened at Rock Church, you know? So I think hearing the joy that comes out of that, even though maybe sometimes it was very difficult, a lot of times it was probably difficult, but I think there's got to be that, right? And the joy and the trial that we talk about
that's a lot.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Good, I mean, he says his ways are not our ways. His thoughts are not our thoughts.
Yeah.
So
us
defining like what it means to have joy, us to even like happiness, I think that's the thing, is that we have to not define the results of being a Christian and following Christ by a worldly standard. We have to redefine what that means by what God says, what the scriptures say. What is joy? Are the generation wants to be happy? I mean, that's not just from Gen Z, but I mean, that's a problem in our country and our world and as a whole.
People are
searching for this fulfillment and happiness that will never come unless you have Christ. So how do we expect that definition from the world of happiness, fulfillment, and joy to then you go and translate it and you follow Christ? Well, what if you hit a bad patch and you're unhappy during a season? That doesn't mean the goodness of God isn't there. That doesn't mean his love isn't sufficient. His blood doesn't cover all. That just means we have to understand what joy really means in the trials and in the hardships. You look at Jesus hanging on a cross. He still had joy in his Father. He still had joy in what he was doing, because he was doing the will and the call of the Lord. So we have to redefine what that all means.
Yeah, I like that. One of my like pet peeves on this whole topic of the cost of your voice is social media. I'm all for freedom of speech and all that good stuff, and share your heart, and you want to challenge leaders and coaches and pastors, and the list goes on. I'm for that. I understand that.
Yeah,
there's free game there. I just feel like there's this mindset of, you know, I can say whatever I want.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like social media courage, you know, that everybody wants to be, not everybody, but a high percentage of people want to kind of share their voice, be heard, even maybe on podcast, right?
Yeah.
There's no price to pay. There's no cost. And it just, it really irritates me, you know, because again, I want this voice to cost me something and to pay a price. But when I watch a lot of, whether it's videos on Instagram or Facebook or TikTok or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a voice. Everybody wants to say something. They all want a platform, but I don't sense a lot of people want to pay a price for their voice. Even Christian people. Maybe we can get into that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that's a great point. I don't, You know, it's funny. I think people do pay a price. So I think that, I think there is a little bit of that going on. Like, have you ever heard, you know what, maybe this is a Gen Z thing. I don't know. Have you ever heard of like a spam account or like a, it used to be called Finsta. So maybe I'm dating myself a little bit. Well, you have spam accounts that I think to your point, people create a spam account to be themselves and do whatever they want. And there's like these accounts for high schools that they'll post like almost Friday, right? And they'll post these outrageous pictures. People submit pictures and they'll put the, these pictures on Instagram. And oh, it's a spam account. It's okay. We can post whatever we want. And I think that there's a little bit of pushback because when people see the real selves or when they're trying to be themselves, people could make fun of it. You know, people could do a lot to maybe dismantle their character you know, rip on them or talk about them behind their back. And so I think there's a little bit of a price to pay. But in general, yeah, it is bothersome because now you get people, especially with like things that aren't true. I'll see a post about the Detroit Lions signing somebody and then I'm like, did this happen? And I have to go back and literally, you know, Google it to see if this happened. So that's the frustrating part about society is that there is no price to pay because they do it for the likes. They do it for the attention.
Wow.
In reality, you know, there's still things that people think they can get away with, but there is a little bit of a accountability from people, whether it's Christian accountability or not, you know? So I don't know. I don't know if you see the same thing.
Nice perspective. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I think no matter what you do, there is going to be a cost, but like what kind of cost is it coming with?
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? So if people are putting their focus and stuff into surfacey things, what's the cost?
Yeah.
The authenticity and the deeper relationships. If people are not chasing those,
right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's, I think that the trouble is that they're chasing these empty things to fulfill them.
Yes.
It's a quick fill, but it's not sustainable or long-term or, you know, from the source, you know, everything, all joy comes from the Lord and all that fulfillment. If we're getting it from a worldly source, that's going to tap out.
Yeah.
So I think how do we want it to cost? This is almost like the same idea as like our own bodies. If we don't take care of ourselves, we're not eating right, we're not exercising, doing those things. There's a cost of giving up your time, your energy, and not doing things and indulging in things you want, but you get a healthy lifestyle. The opposite. If you indulge, you don't exercise, you don't take care of your body, all those things, your cost is your long-term health. So that's the thing. It's like, we're going to have a cost no matter what we do. It's just, what are we willing? What is the real cost at the end of the day?
Yeah, I
want to make sure I don't come across, nor do I want us to support, you know, Christian voices out there that are obnoxious, you know, self-righteous.
Yeah.
You know, in an unhealthy way. Where they judge people. The last thing I want is to be annoying and obnoxious, you know, and then say that you're being persecuted or you're facing opposition when you're just being an idiot. You know, I mean,
that's a great point.
And there's so much of that going on there. That's the last thing I want to paint a picture of that I support by no means. I just think that to me, it's more of when they're taking shots at culture or they're taking shots at the church or they're taking shots at leaders. And I know that that just comes with the territory, but it's like, you ain't leading anybody. So you can rip on whoever else is out there that's trying to make a difference in society. No one's following you and there's no price to pay for you because, you know, there's no cost at all of what you're saying. If anything, you're getting a bunch of likes and everybody agreeing with it.
Yeah.
And you just ripped on someone who's really trying to make a difference in society and they may not be doing it perfect.
Yeah.
So,
well, and I think of the verse, I don't know what book it's in, but where Paul talks about like, I've become all things to all people so that I might win some.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that sometimes Christians look at culture and go, I'm going to be my true self. I'm on fire for Jesus, which is amazing. And then I'm going to go and blast everybody with Jesus. Like you said, being annoying, right?
Yeah.
And instead you're not adapting to who that person is and how that person's wired and maybe reaching them a different way.
Right.
And I think that's the tension you're talking about because you want to have a cost, but you don't want to be that person that, you know, I'm annoying. Well, I'm being bold for Jesus. No, you're just being annoying. Like, you know, and I think that's the.
Yeah. Paul, I forgot the verse it is too. And I don't want to misquote it, but he basically says, don't be weird.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, just like
You can be second opinion.
Message version. Just don't be weird. It's okay. You can just be a Christian and a normal person.
Be yourself.
Be yourself. Be a normal person. And it's like, I think that sometimes, like, this is a kind of a two-sided answer or a little bit of a tangent, is that we have to become a character when you become a Christian. That's not what God called us to be. God created us in His image.
Right. I am Tommy.
You're Peyton. We're all our own individual people. And then when we find Christ, it's not that we now become this completely different personality. And yeah, we make different choices, right? We choose to make sure that we're living a godly lifestyle in order to honor the Lord and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, we're all uniquely and individually made, and we don't have to play this or put on this act that I am now a Christian. No, you're still a real person. You're just making choices that are honoring with the Lord. And I think that's going to connect with people. I think people can sniff out inauthenticity and they just don't want it. I think that's some of the challenge with ministering to people, is that there's been a lot of inauthenticity. And I don't think we should just spread the gospel because we get a Christian notch in our belt. I think we are spreading the gospel because we have to have a heart for people. That has to be the cost. Hey, I'm generally going to go and start developing relationships with people who are in the world, who are lost, and be that light for them in the world versus just passing them on the street saying, you know, it's great. Don't get me wrong. It's true. I love the heart behind it. But when people are just like, you know, going out yelling on a corner, hellfire and brimstone, how many times have you gone to your non-Christian cousin, sat down with them, and just spent time with them? Showing them the love of Christ.
You haven't met any of my Italian cousins.
I'm just saying.
I'd rather be on the street corner preaching hellfire and brimstone.
That's fair. And there's a place for that, right? And I'm not saying there's not a place for going out.
There's definitely a place for both.
Yeah, there's definitely a place for both. But the question is that how many times are we developing relationships and being in relationship with people in order to show that love of God, who Jesus is, and being the example, the hands and feet of Jesus, versus us just throwing it out there because it makes us feel like we're more of a Christian, if that makes sense.
That's a good point, yeah.
What about you guys personally? And let's just bring this home to our own individual walks with the Lord. What is your voice for Jesus, your commitment to Christ? What has it costed you guys?
That's a great question.
Because I surely don't want to just challenge all our viewers, you know, make sure that, you know, their voice is paying a price for the cause of Christ. What about us? What in your past or maybe even in your future, what do you think it might cost you?
I'll give a funny example because I think it kind of illustrates a little bit of what I'm talking about. Like, I have a great family, so it doesn't cost me my family, you know, if that makes sense. I've got great people in my life. But
in many countries, it does.
It would, right. Yeah, And where I live, in my context, it doesn't, right? And so I have to think about that a little bit and where's my persecution? Obviously not to the level of what we talk about. But it's funny because there was one time, I'll tell a story, and maybe the person watching this will know what grad party it was, but I was at a grad party. And I go low key. I don't tell people I'm a pastor when I go to grad parties. So if I go to people's grad parties, don't tell them I'm a pastor, because I want to be able to talk to people. And I know grad parties can get a little crazy sometimes. And I'm just there to support the student and hang out with people and, you know, eat some good food and leave. And I went to a grad party one time and I was trying to be low key, did not know anybody else except for the student at this party and one other person. And I went there and the person grabbed me and started introducing me to every single person at this grad party as their pastor, made me pray for them or pray for them the food. And then at that point, everybody shut me out. I didn't have a single conversation with anybody else. And when I went around them, they were kind of like closed off. So I say that to say, when you live for God, I think people take notice. And I was just talking to somebody about this the other day. I think sometimes people, there's a couple of responses. I don't think jealousy is the right word, but I think people go, I want what that person has, but I'm not good enough to have what that person has. And so they kind of shut you out a little bit in terms of like, well, they're the holy one, they're the Christian one, they're the whatever. So it's living in a way that I've had to learn of like, I'm going to be myself and model God through my actions and not just through my title, you know? So I've had to learn to live with the cost of like, I'm going to probably get socially outcasted in times, but as long as my actions line up, you know, I can reach that person for God. So I don't know if that kind of answers your question, you know, but my actions speak louder than my words. Yeah.
That's what it's costing you.
Right.
Yeah. What about you, Bishop?
Yeah. Thank you. I kind of have a twofold answer. There was definitely a period in my life when I met my wife. It was kind of a big shift for my walk with Christ. I grew up in the church, always loved the Lord. I would not say I was an actively holding my ground. Life was costing me things for being a Christian. I leaned, you know what I mean? I would compromise. I was not living the lifestyle that the Lord called me to do. I wasn't doing anything too egregious to the world standards, but to God's standards, you just might as well say I wasn't a Christian. You know what I mean? And so the Lord always had a little hook on me, and I would kind of go away from God and kind of come back and stuff like that. And let me tell you, me and my wife always joke saying that God speaks to her through yeses and God speaks to me through nos. And it's not just like a no, it's like a slam me in the door. Yeah, slams in the door, hits me straight in the face. Like, oh, that's clearly God saying no. And he would just pull the rug from underneath me. I would pursue my own thing, do my own thing. And every time I would try to open the door and pry it open myself, it just gets slammed right in front of me. But when I met my wife, I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I'm either going to choose to be the man of the house and be the spiritual leader of my family, or I'm gonna continue to be kind of a mediocre guy in my walk. And I just didn't want to have that for my family. And so I really started leaning into my relationship with Christ. And I've been with my wife for now about 8 years. And so really took a sharp turn there. So one, there was a cost of not listening to the Lord. You know, like just doing my own way, especially just there's the kind of three different ones. It's like not being a Christian. Obviously, you're not following the Lord's path. Being a Christian, following the Lord's path, and that costing you. And then the guy in the middle where like you are a Christian, but you're not really walking what God's calling is for your life. And I experienced that. So there's a big cost with that. And then now having turned the page and being a Christian, or being a guy who's really focused on my relationship with Christ and what he wants me to do, he started speaking in yeses, but weren't the yeses that I necessarily wanted.
Right, yeah.
I started a real estate brokerage back in California, and we were working on some deals, and I thought these yeses that were now I'm following the Lord and being a good leader in my family. Well, he shut that down because he called me to Michigan. He called me to go to Michigan, and through that, it led me into ministry. So the cost of me following Christ and listening to what he wanted me to do is I'm away from my family, and I'm in a new environment, and I'm in a new world and field that I never expected to be in. But he used a lot of my disobedience to lead me to where I am now. And there's a cost to it, but it's such a more fulfilling cost than ever before, when I was pursuing my own thing, doing my own thing, and thinking this is going to fulfill me. This is what is going to make me happy. This is what's going to bring me joy. But no, it was actually when I relinquished that and I focused on the things he called me to be that actually brought me into the ministry that he was ready to have for me.
Do you guys feel like, I don't know, for me personally, kind of tagging onto that, the God's voice is the clearest in my prayer life when I'm like the boldest in my prayer life. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Like when I'm pretty bold in my prayer life, like God, you know, I need a no or I need a yes, you know, his voice is a little bit clearer. I remember one time I was trying to decide what college I wanted to go to, and I was just torn up about it. I was like, God, I need you to tell me yes. I need to hear a yes. And I didn't hear a yes. And then after that, like that period of time, God spoke into my life and like things began to happen. And so I feel like for me, I don't know about everybody else, if you pastor feel the same way, like when I'm the boldest in my prayer life and I'm the most intentional, I guess is a way to say it. That's when I get a little bit more clarity from the Holy Spirit on direction.
Totally.
It takes time, you know?
Totally. And usually when it's something bold that you have to do, there's a cost attached to it. You know?
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. But I sometimes think that it's not always a yes, not always a no. I think sometimes it's in the middle where he wants you to make the decision.
That's a good point too.
You know what I mean? So like if like, hey Lord, do you want me to, let's say, let's use a college example.
Yeah.
Do you want me to go to this college or this college? I almost bring it back to like a father. It's like if my son was coming to me saying, hey dad, what should I go to, this college or this college? I would ask, you know, which one's important to you, you know what I mean? And help him work through those decisions. I know which one I think would be best for him and stuff like that.
My kids came up to me and said, you know, I feel led by the Lord to go to Michigan State.
Right.
I'd look him right in the eye and say,
no, I'm saying
that's not the will of the Lord.
No, I agree. No, we
I
wouldn't want sin in their lives. Yeah, we don't you know want what I mean? Sin.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean is that sometimes I think the Lord, I love one of the quotes you say is like, the Lord, you don't have to go and pray over whether you want boysenberry or raspberry jam. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right. Which
at
one
the
you
end
like?
Of the day, I think the God will sometimes not fully speak because he's allowing us to develop and sharpen right, our ear, sharpen well. Our eye, and be able to make those decisions ourselves. And I think when it comes to things that are not kingdom detrimental to our lives or the people around us, like, for example, if I was going to go to, you know, Tennessee or if I was going to go to Texas, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's not going to really affect, you know, there might be something that happens there. Sure, that could be an effect, but let's just say we have a normal experience at both. That's not going to necessarily affect my walk with Christ. Right. I think at the end of the day, he lets us kind of work those things out. I think yeah. we can over, I'm not saying your situation was this, but we can overanalyze God's voice.
Yeah.
That I have to have a hard yes or a hard no.
Well,
and
true.
If I don't
yeah.
get a yes, then I can't do it. And I don't think necessarily the voice of God works that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. But in context, maybe what we're talking about today, I just want to make sure that whatever that decision is that we make, that we realize in general, there's probably going to be some price to pay or some cost to pay for the decision that you sense the Lord's calling you to.
Yeah.
I was hoping you guys would ask me, what about some cost that you've paid? What about some prices that you paid?
I got a question for you, actually. What about some costs that you...
Wait, we can go to his question if you can just answer what some costs that you've made.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to that. Appreciate that. Oh, man. I think initially when I first gave my life to the Lord, I mean, I was caught up in the party scene. I don't really want to get into that in this episode. And my relationship with my earthly father wasn't the healthiest. I was extremely rebellious, and God pulled me out of certain cultures and certain crowds of people. I just had to get out of there. Otherwise I was going to go down a journey that I wouldn't come back from. Mm-hmm. So I had to get away from that crowd that I was with. They were just too strong of an influence. And there was a price to pay in the area of just community. Because I think what I missed at first when I became a Christian and I started hanging around mostly Christians was I missed my old community. I missed the relationships. I missed the friendships. Didn't miss the partying. I wanted to be out of that. I didn't miss the immorality and the rest of it. But what I missed was the community. And there was a price to pay. I didn't maybe handle that perfectly. You know, there might have been a little self-righteousness in there, but for the most part I just knew I had to get away from it. And there was just a price to pay from that. And then with my family it was tough at first. You know, they didn't understand my new walk with Christ. They didn't understand the born again experience.
Were you the first Christian in your family? Or like, were you the first?
My sister actually, she's a couple years older than me, and she came to Christ first, and she began to share the Lord with me, and maybe a month and a half, 2 months after she shared the Lord with me, to make a long story short, I gave my life to Christ. But my family was tough on me, man. I mean, mom, dad, cousins. It was not easy. Again, I don't think I handled myself perfectly. You know, back in the mid late 80s, you know, there was a little more emphasis on getting people's faces and getting people's grills. And I don't think I necessarily always communicated what Jesus did in my life in a very healthy way. But nevertheless, man, I was filled with zeal and passion. And it cost me a lot of time with my family, and they just did not understand it. It wasn't really until Rock Church got built where my family started coming around going, wow, maybe this Jesus thing is real, you know, where they just kind of looked down at me, I think, for the most part of my Christianity. They just thought it was like a phase. But once God started doing incredible things in me and through me, in some ways, God used that to win my family. I remember becoming a youth pastor. And I mean, when you become a youth pastor, you're paying a price in a lot of different ways. But one of them you pay a price in is in finances. I mean, you really don't make that much Peyton, this isn't a time to ask for a raise.
Yeah. We'll talk off camera.
We'll talk about that later. But I mean, you talk about a price to pay because, you know, at that time I'm in my late 20s. I'm a youth pastor. And a lot of my friends that were my age, they weren't youth pastors. And they were starting to make some really big money and getting in their house. And,
yeah.
And we were just way behind that. And I'm almost ashamed to say it, but it's like I paid the price of, you know, not making as much money as other people my age. But there was a cost there. I mean, compared to the rest of the world, I'm almost embarrassed to say that. But there was a price to pay there, too. And then planting a church, you know, really didn't start making any finances, making any money until maybe the fifth, sixth, seventh year into it.
Yeah.
It's 23 years old now as a church, but there's a price to pay when you're planting a church. You take over a church, you got some guaranteed salary, you got a copy machine, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, in pastoring, the friendships that we've gained, but also the friendships that we've lost, because when you're a pastor, you're a shepherd.
Yeah.
You got to say some yeses, you got to say some nos, you got to say some not nows.
Yeah.
And lost some really good friendships just through pastoring. Again, I don't think I handled all of those situations perfect or well, but in general, you know, those are some of the prices that my wife and I, Kim, have had to pay.
So, yeah. I feel like there's so many examples there that I wish we had more time to dive into it, but like, those are things that people, I think, walk through today, you know, like even the comparison of, well, this person's got a house, this person's got a family, this person graduated college, this person, whatever, you know, it's a cost you're going to pay when you follow God in any of those categories. Right. And so I think that's super important. There might be some people out there that, well, God's calling me to give a lot to a special missions project or something, or to be sacrificial this month or whatever. Like, he might not, other people aren't going to be doing that necessarily. So you're going to be paying a cost that they don't have to pay, you know? So I think that's a great point.
Yeah. I think I have a very similar, well, first of all, you didn't say I couldn't ask for a raise. You just said Peyton.
Just
so,
me. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go.
No, but I think that's mine as well. I've never really dealt with relational sacrifices. I think a little bit of that, it comes from my disobedience too. I think that's, but I think it has been more so of like my time and like the different things, like my energy, that's time true. And things like that.
Yeah,
I think that's probably some of the biggest costs of not just like my relationship with Christ, but like just ministry in general, like going
volunteering and things of that nature.
Yeah. I was at a church. This is before I worked. Well, actually, I had worked for a church previous, but it was in between my two church jobs I had worked. I was a volunteer for a church out in LA, and I used to drive. It was about an hour away, and we lived about 45 minutes outside of the city. I'd drive to the 9 o'clock, I'd serve, I'd go back home, pick up my wife, drive. So I'd drive almost 3 hours a day just so I could go and serve and all that kind of stuff. And I just have a heart to help. I just wanted to help. That was involved with the kids ministry at the time. I didn't get into creative until, you know, just a couple of years ago, but I used to serve primarily in youth or kids and stuff like that. But that was, I guess you can say, a cost of my voice. Or I always just want to be the, I think one of my big things is like, I just want to be the example I'm saying you should be, if that makes sense. I want to lead by example. I don't want to lead by my voice, which I think they go hand in hand. I just want to always make sure my actions match what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that was like, I think that's the biggest part, just making sure my character's in line. I think that's part of the cost. It's like, you can't slip back, you know, because if you slip back and you're not doing the things you're telling other people they should be doing, then you're just going to be leading people in the wrong direction. So making sure that you're on top of it's a part of the cost.
Yeah. It's probably a good place to land. I guess really what I want, guys, is just to make sure that not only my life, but also this podcast, there's a price to pay for it. You know, I'm surely not looking to, like I said earlier, to be martyred for the podcast.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure that the stuff we share, the stuff we talk about is kind of edgy and challenging to this generation. I'm also wanting to inspire and encourage the generations, but I really feel like God wants to make sure that this podcast, you know, has a little edge to it, and there's a little bit of a cost to pay.
Yeah.
So that's why I want to start our first one with this. You guys are incredible. We're going to do another podcast soon. I can't wait. And we can't thank you guys all enough for being part of On the Rock. Thank you.